Hello and welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, November 8th, 2018. And this episode's a day late because, I'm not going to lie to you, I completely forgot to schedule it, and so it's coming out a day late. My apologies. I'll try to be a little bit better with my scheduling. Tomorrow there will be an episode, by the way, so if you're listening to this on Thursday, there will be a new episode on Friday, or whenever you listen to this, you'll see another episode. Without further ado, the topic for this day's episode is Dark Horse Comics. And you might be thinking to yourself, why Dark Horse Comics? And I'm going to tell you why, because Dark Horse Comics was recently partially funded by a Chinese firm. And I want to talk about that because I think it's important in the world of comics, especially now when the focus has become so large on turning comic book properties into TV shows and movies that we talk about this thing. Because I got to tell you, to me it seems like all this has happened before and all this will happen again. So this news was announced on the 29th, I think, of October, so it's about a week ago. And I spent a couple days thinking about this thing. I know I went back and forth with Ed on Twitter a little bit about what this was, and he kind of had the same idea as I did. But I'll give a brief recap of what this deal is. So Dark Horse Entertainment has confirmed that Vanguard Visionary Assets has acquired an ownership take in the company as part of a recently announced financial deal. Now, we don't know what it is, but it does say here that the owner of the company, Mike Richardson, he still has a large chunk of ownership in the company. Now, here's what Vanguard had to say. Vanguard's investment will go into a number of areas, including a stock purchase, a development fund, and a film fund, investment in the publishing and product divisions, and expansion of our retail efforts. Vanguard's investment is in Dark Horse Comics, or Dark Horse Entertainment, LLC, which includes Dark Horse Comics, Dark Horse Studios, and the comic book retail chain store Things from Another World, which, by the way, I had no idea Things from Another World was tied into Dark Horse, but I guess that kind of makes sense now. In fact, they're not the only ones. I think there's a parent company, I can't remember what the shop is, but there's a parent company that owns a comic book retailer. They also own Bleeding Cool, they own Avatar Press, they own a couple of other companies. So this is not like particularly, you know, exclusive to Dark Horse. But it is interesting that they're actually investing in the entire company and not just on the comics. Now, I can understand the Dark Horse Studios thing because Dark Horse Studios, of course, would be involved with producing TVs and film. What the chain has to do with it, I'm not sure. Maybe my assumption is that the current owners of Dark Horse don't really want Things from Another World to kind of go away. And the thing is, Things from Another World has a large online presence, a very large online presence. If I think of like online retailers, obviously the first one that comes to mind for me would be like My Comic Shop, would be like Midtown Comics, would be DCBS. And then behind that, I would say Things from Another World, TFAW.com. So it's pretty big enterprise that they're investing in here. And I try to do a little bit of research into what it is that Vanguard Investments does, the Vanguard Visionary Assets Group does. And it was kind of, I don't know, a little dubious, I would say. And probably because it's a Chinese company and most of the articles that I would be able to find on this company would be written in like Mandarin or whatever else, Cantonese. But I didn't find a whole lot of information. In fact, if you go and search for Vanguard Visionary Assets, the main results that really come up are going to be this Dark Horse investment deal. Now, I did manage to find a little more information. It looks like this is a gigantic company overseas. Gigantic. They own one of the largest investment funds in Eastern Asia. In fact, I think their specialty is in retirement funds. So I find that really fascinating that a company like that would want to get in on this business. Although, really, probably not very surprising, right? Because comics are big money. And maybe not necessarily the comics themselves. I mean, you can go to Comicron and look up comic book sales for any particular publisher. And chances are, there's not very many books selling over, we'll just say 30,000, 40,000 copies. And yet, when those things translate into film and into TV, those numbers are much larger, right? Especially over Marvel. Marvel's been very successful. And they make a ton of money. Ton of money. I mean, think about like Black Panther and Avengers, right? Infinity War with Thanos. I mean, those movies made a billion plus. That's a ton of money. And sure, it takes a lot of money to actually pay for those films, right? So you're looking at a budget of hundreds of millions of dollars. You have a marketing budget that sometimes equals the production cost of the film, which I find partially fascinating and partially completely ludicrous that they're spending so much money on just marketing material. But of course, some of these things do have other venues of recouping the investment, right? So, for example, the good thing about comic book movies, for example, in particular, you would say like a Marvel or a DC, would be tie-in merchandise. So like lunchboxes or t-shirts or, you know, Happy Meal toys or whatever, those kind of things. All that's taken into account into how to recoup that money, right? It's not just about movie ticket sales, right? Because, for example, movie theaters, I believe it's only the first 7 days, 7 to 10 days, that really movie studios make money on the film. After that, the proceeds of the film goes generally towards movie theaters. Now, not entirely. There's some kind of like really weird way that this whole thing, all the money is divided up. I think it's like after a week or two, it's like a 50-50 split, and then it's like a 60-40 split, a 70-30 split, and then I think after like 6 weeks or something like that, the 100% of the proceeds just pretty much go to the movie theaters. And the thing is, you never really see very many films going, still showing at a movie theater after like 6 to 8 weeks. And you know, part of the reason for that is most people by that point that want to see it have already seen it. And so the thing is, movie theaters want to make the most amount of money. Can't blame them. That's their business. And so as a result, they just kind of quit showing the movies after a certain number of weeks. Even though technically they could get more profit from that, they're not really making all their money from actual ticket sales. They make their money off popcorn and drinks. That's why you pay $10 for a bag of popcorn, right? Or whatever it is, $8 for a Coke. I like one of the theaters local to me because they have very reasonable prices. It's like $9 for a ticket, not matinee, by the way, just like a Friday night. It's like $9.25 for an adult. And then, you know, you can buy your drinks and your popcorn, but you get unlimited free refills on either one. So that's pretty sweet. But for the most part, I think, you know, most theater chains don't have that business model. The business model really is about getting people in the door to buy concessions. And so they want to have the hottest films at all times. And after, like I said, 6 to 8 weeks, you're not seeing a large return on investment. Now this deal is interesting, and I found a couple of different ones because the news originally came out on the 29th, and then there was a follow-up interview with Richardson about the stakes of the deal. Because of course, after this was announced, people started talking, and you know, it seemed maybe in some way that Vanguard Visionaries may have acquired a majority stake in the company. And to me, that does seem to be the case still. And Richardson kind of was going against some of the popular opinion that this was going to kind of go against the comic company. And he says, look, we still retain control of this whole thing. Nobody needs to fear about any of these things. Okay. Here's a quote. I did this deal to accelerate company growth. Nothing like cash and new markets to help with that task. We started out working with them to build a film fund. The deal expanded into other areas as we continued down that path. So what I gathered from that is, originally Dark Horse wanted to expand, and I don't blame them. Because the thing is, Dark Horse lost a large chunk of their properties because of the Disney Marvel deal, for example. Now Richardson states in this follow-up article that I found that the fact that they lost Star Wars, one of their biggest franchises, right? Star Wars, Conan, those kind of things. Just because they lost those properties, that had nothing to do with this deal. What they want to do is expand beyond just the comics and go into film. And totally understandable, right? So, for example, they've got a couple things going on right now, like Umbrella Academy. I believe it's going to Netflix, but I can't remember. That's the Gerard Way book that's coming out from Dark Horse. I believe it's a new volume out now as well. And of course, like, that's where the money is, right? That's where everybody wants to go. In fact, we're seeing this across the board through all kinds of comic book publishers. And I find it interesting too, because I remember a couple of years back, for example, like 451 Studios, a company that had some really interesting books coming out that I really enjoyed, but I don't think they really hit like a big stride until they put out Stained, which was David Barron's book. and supposedly the sequel to Stained, the comic, was going to be coming out as a movie, which I found to be an interesting strategy because, I mean, if you're setting up this world in a miniseries, and I mean, it's a small publisher, so you may be selling, I don't know, 10, 15,000 copies tops. How does that actually get people in the door who have never heard of this? You kind of have to redo some of that origin story, right, in order to get the film. Anyways, I'll talk to David about it at some point. But they do, of course, have other things going on over there, right? It's not just about Star Wars and Conan, right? There's plenty of other books. Some of them, I think, really quite good. I think Dark Horse right now is in a great spot, and they have been for, I would say, at least the past year or so, right? I think for a little while when they lost those, you know, those properties, Star Wars and Conan and that kind of thing, they were, some comic fans maybe were a little worried about the future of Dark Horse. But then they started coming out with books like Jeff Lemire's Black Hammer Universe, which has done very well for them. It's not a huge seller, but it sells well enough that they continue to do them. And there's always new Black Hammer books out, right? Because Lemire is that kind of guy. He's a very creative guy. He's always got a lot of stories he wants to tell. So that's done very well for them. And of course, Black Hammer is going to be in development for, I think, film. I don't think that's going to be a TV show. But there's other really great stuff out there. Like Death Orb, which just came out, I think the first issue came out last month or 2 months ago. Really great book. I think I talked about it on this podcast, actually, when the first issue came out. Really good stuff. You know, Matt Kent does books over there. Like Ether, for example, a book that I think is extremely underrated. Books like Sword Daughter, which I think extremely underrated. And that's the thing about these Dark Horse books. There has not been a Dark Horse book out of the current batch of stuff that's coming out that I hate. In fact, I would say I love the majority of them. I mean, Sword Daughter, I've talked about that several issues of that book because I think it's brilliant. And there are people that I know that don't really read comics that I kind of talk to them about Sword Daughter, and they picked it up and loved it. And it's not for everybody because it's not a superhero book. So if that's what you're looking for, Dark Horse is not the place. It's not the place. I mean, maybe if you want to look up Black Hammer, you might get some of that. But Black Hammer is a little bit different because the thing about the Black Hammer universe is that it calls back to a different era in comics, right? The Black Hammer universe, I would say, draws a lot from both Golden Age and Silver Age, so it would be placed somewhere in the middle of that area. And of course, there's many characters that are inspired by those type of characters, one of my favorite being the Starman inspiration, Dr. Star. I think it's brilliant. I love all those books. The current one that's set in the far future, fantastic title. But of course, you need to have a creative team that is able to put out high quality content. And that's something that I think some smaller publishers haven't really gotten the grip of, right? I mean, there's plenty of publishers popping up all the time. But, you know, we've seen this before a couple of years ago. You had like 451. See, I forgot again. So whoever told me, I think Rob maybe or Ronnie, I talked about the comic book universe that was inspired by George Romero's Night of the Living Dead universe, which of course is public domain, so they can do stuff in that work. Fascinating story, by the way. Hopefully I'll get to talk about that in some podcast at some point. The fact that Night of the Living Dead is public domain and not actually copywritten work. But, you know, they had all these plans, and they started out with comics. They wanted to go with the film. You know, 451 was owned by the guy that did the Transformers franchise, for example. And they really haven't gone anywhere. All those publishers are kind of dead or dying, right? I was talking to Aaron Bell from Absolute DC about 451 because they always had a booth at, like, New York Comic Con and didn't have a presence there this time. And I thought that was interesting because they still tweet about some of their stuff. But every time I see them talking about the work, it's always stuff that has already been out for a year, 2 years, 3 years. But then you have, on the other side, publishers that I really love, not just Dark Horse, but take Aftershock, for example. Aftershock is owned by kind of a media company. Their main purpose, I think, ultimately, would be to foster some of the talent that they get, some of the books that they get, and turn them into film. And of course, they're doing that now, right? There is an Aftershock Productions. They're going to be doing the Animosity film. There's a bunch of other projects that were recently announced that are going to be coming to either TV or film. Lost City Explorers being one of them. A book that I've been it's been kind of hit or miss for me. You can listen to the Aftershock Central podcast about why. I think the the premise was really interesting, right? An archaeologist that gets lost in Atlantis that he finds underneath New York City, and his daughter and his son try to go find him. But the ending didn't quite hit the landing for me. And I understand that, you know, they're turning this into a film, right? I think it was optioned maybe like immediately after the first issue came out, or maybe right before the first issue came out. So, you know, they have that wing. And of course you have a company like Vault Comics, for example. Vault Comics has had a few of their titles optioned for film as well. And I don't know what the state of those are, because the thing about having a comic book property being optioned doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to see that thing in any other sort of media, right? Basically, it means that a company gives a creator or a company a chunk of change to reserve the rights to make this into something. And, you know, it might not be a whole lot, right? But it could be like a year's salary, right? Like, I mean, you might get a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 option. And then maybe you're just kind of set, right? As a comic creator, you're just kind of set for a year. You can just hang out, work in your next project, and not have to worry about what the next thing is. But of course, none of those things are guaranteed. And, you know, we've seen this for decades where the majority of these projects just kind of fall by the wayside, or they exchange owners. And sometimes the new owners don't really have the same vision as the previous one, but they're the ones that end up making the final product, right? This has happened all the time. All the time. For decades. I mean, think about that Superman flick that was supposed to be coming out with Nicolas Cage. All right. There's a documentary about that. There's that, canceled Fantastic Four filmed, that never happened. There's a documentary about that. So, I mean, this has been happening for, you know, the better part of 30, 40 years. Nothing new, but there's always companies wanting to try these things out. And I understand why, right? Because the money is not in comics. I mean, we should all know that, right? That's not a secret. The money is not in comics. The money is in other forms of media, because not everybody reads comics, but everybody watches TV. Everybody goes to the movies, and you gotta get your popcorn. You gotta buy your DVD set or Blu-ray set, whatever. I don't do any of that stuff. I just stream it. You know what I mean? Like, I'll buy a digital copy of a movie, but I don't buy physical media. At least not in film and TV anymore. But that's kind of where the future is, and I think publishers know this. It's just a matter of whether it sticks or not, right? And the thing about this whole Dark Horse deal that has me a little concerned is the way that the wording is structured, right? Because, I mean, people, there was a representative, what was his name? Stanley Chung. He's the chairman, he was former chairman of Walt Disney Company in China. He is now the chairman of Vanguard Visionaries. And he said, "We see a great fit between our companies. Our goals are similar. We feel by combining our efforts, we'll be able to enhance Dark Horse's visibility internationally on the way to making it a leader in the film business, while also making its publishing and product offering available to new fans around the world." And I think that's super cool, right? The intent of this is great. Because of course, right, Dark Horse has a large presence here. They might have a large presence, like, let's say in the UK, because it's also distributed by Diamond. But what about in other places, right? That's a little more difficult. And I think part of the reason for that is the culture is different in different places. You know, I've talked to creators on this podcast and off air from around the world that tell me about the way that comics work in those other countries. And I'd like to do more of that, because I think it's actually fascinating. But, you know, in some places, single comics like we have here and in the UK don't really work very well, right? I mean, even in Europe, you see a lot of publishers putting out more like trade format style books, or like, you know, oversized stories, right? The formatting's different. You might have like a 60-page comic coming out instead of like the 22-page comic. And it might be a one-shot, or you might see, you know, like whatever, 100-page, 200-page comic. And you're buying it as a trade, right? Like, that's the model there. And that's the model in a lot of the other places, for example, too. I remember talking to a person. I'm not going to say which country it is, because I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this, but he worked in a Latin American country for a comic book publisher. And the way that they do it there, for example, is they release books as trades, right? So they would be the equivalent to, like, I don't know, $8.99, $9.99, something like that. But they're not actual trades of comics. What they do is they combine books into something similar to like the Walmart DC books, right? Where they have like four or five different stories in there. Except these are full issues. So you're getting like three or four full issues of multiple titles, right? So you might have like Batman Rebirth number one and, you know, Super Sons number three and whatever, right? And a lot of times they'll do them as flip books too, which I think is cool, right? So you might have like two issues of Batman on one side and you flip it and you have two issues of Superman on the other side. And I think that's cool. It's an interesting way of doing it because, you know, different places have different ways that they want to consume their media. And of course, some of these countries just can't afford to spend $4 on a comic, $5 on a comic. So by doing something as a book, as a trade, it makes it a little more appetizing for people that have that kind of disposable income to want to actually get in and try these things out. So I understand wanting to expand internationally. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. But of course, the main thing here is ultimately TV and movies. And I think probably particularly film. That seems to be a large focus in these Chinese companies that want to purchase at least a large chunk of American comic book companies or whatever, European comic book companies or whatever else. I'm just using American companies because that's the majority of my audience. And I think it's interesting and it makes sense because this has been happening again for many, many years. One good way to recoup cash and make extra cash is to invest in film if you think the film will be successful. And we saw something like, for example, Iron Man 3, which was extremely successful, and that money made, that company made a bunch of money on that, and we'll get to them again in a second, because they are kind of important to the discussion that I want to talk about. And it's a great investment, right? Like, that's what these companies are. They're investment companies. They're not media companies. They're looking to expand their portfolio. And this is not like just an investment company thing. Right. If you look at companies in Korea, for example, I think those companies are fascinating because the amount of diversity that they have in their investments is ridiculous. Right. So take a look at like Samsung, and I'm not going to talk about tech too much, but obviously I love tech. And so I'm a little familiar with this topic. If you look at Samsung here in the US, we know Samsung from, for example, like televisions or phones, right? Probably mostly phones, but televisions, yeah, fridges, things like that. But if you want to go overseas, I mean, Samsung is humongous. They own hospitals. They have insurance companies that they own. They do, you know, electronics. They do, they have investment companies. They do, I think they have investments in like grocery chains, for example. There were a couple companies like that, recently that I was looking at. One that just put out a phone. And I looked into them and they got the start as a grocery chain in Korea. And it's fascinating, but it's brilliant as well, right? Because if you are a company that wants to make sure that you last, you can't just put all your eggs in one basket, right? You can't just be a phone company. You can't just be a television company. You have to do everything. And then once you start doing other things, you see, oh, well, the technology we have for this market can apply to this other one. Let's do that as well. And so you start branching off and diversifying your portfolio, as they say in finance. Brilliant. But the thing is with comics, it's a little more difficult because the thing about comics is comics have comic fans, and you all listening to this know that comic fans are a very particular bunch. Now, I let my opinions known pretty freely. As I've said before in many of my episodes, I try to be as fair and gray in the way that I talk as possible because I do feel like there are valid arguments to be made on both sides. And of course, we're people and people disagree on many things. But oftentimes when it gets down into comics, things get very heated because people that are still reading comics and we are getting to be a smaller bunch of folks, people that read comics know exactly what kind of comics they want. Exactly what comics they want. So unless you're like brand new getting into comics, chances are you've been reading the same books for years. Or when you pick a new book based on the fact that it's similar to a book that you love. Most likely the first book that you picked up. And that's not always the case, but for the most part it is, right? I mean, I think about myself, like the first comic I picked up was Captain America. And yeah, I love the current run, the Ta-Nehisi run, Ta-Nehisi Coates run. I love it. But for many years, I didn't care to read Captain America, right? Avengers was the second comic I picked. I can go, you know, give or take on Avengers. Like, it's fine, but it doesn't hit me like it did back when I started reading comics. And Batman was the one exception, right? And so I continued with it. And a lot of what I love about comics came from my love of Batman in the early to mid 90s. And that's kind of what I've gotten accustomed to. And yeah, my tastes have changed because you don't always want the same thing. I don't think that's the case, right? We see a lot of people talking about like, oh, you're ruining my blah, blah, blah by this character. This is my favorite character. How dare you do this? And yeah, I get it. But like, you know, expand your horizons. I guarantee you, you may not have that opinion for long if you do. But this Dark Horse thing is interesting because it reminds me of another company, which I have always loved. One of my first loves in comics, aside from, of course, Batman, was Valiant Comics. Because I remember in 1993, the first time I stepped into a comic book shop, because I used to buy my comics at a local, it was like a little deli type thing. And they had a wall just filled with comics and magazines. But that's where I went to get my comics because it was literally up the street from my house. In 93, I found my first comic book shop. And when I walked in, the first comic book that I saw was X-O Manowar number 0 because it had that ridiculous chromium cover that I loved. In fact, I love so much. I own like probably 20 copies of that book. Why? I don't know. But I've always loved X-O Manowar. And when I saw that, I said, holy crap. This is something different, something new, something cool. And it was. And Valiant was great. And I don't want to go through the whole story. You can go check back like the last, I don't know, let's say 10 or so episodes of the Valiant Central podcast. Those are still available both on the website, nerdlegion.com, and if you go to iTunes or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Because Paul and I talked about this at length. So, of course, the whole saga with Valiant started in 2015 when they received a large investment from DMG Entertainment, a Chinese company that had worked on producing films before. For example, the aforementioned Iron Man 3, which made them bukus of money. And in fact, the original announcement for this was almost exactly identical. And I'm going to read you a quote from this article from 2015. And you tell me it doesn't sound very similar. I think our companies fit very well together. I think I just read that same line. It's interesting because the two companies, well, we are in very different worlds and we sat down to talk about how we could work together. It was very exciting because we realized that we had a complementary skill sets and we're both global brands. So one-on-one, in this case, equals three. Our fan base are the fanboys. DMG has been there for 20 years and developed a really strong brand. We're able to bring these two global brands together. We started doing our own branding and we knew the next level was movies and TVs because we wanted to get the larger fan base aware and emotionally invested, so we needed able to control to a certain extent our characters to stick to the core. The concept should remain the same and we wanted to protect that and protect the core. At the end of the day, we knew it had to be DMG. They were enthusiastic and understood the potential of what we had. They basically built a Marvel brand, partially true, in China. It was successful before that, but we knew we were really impressed with what they did with it. All right, so that's from 2015, and of course, we know that things kind of changed at the end of 2017 and into 2018 because there was kind of a hostile takeover, and DMG basically took over Valiant. And, you know, I went back and I looked at Valiant and checked, for example, their market share in the company because, of course, I used to run a site that collected all this information for Valiant exclusively. And I remember that Valiant's market share used to be right below 1%. Not very huge, right? Not very huge at all. But considering they only were putting out, you know, 8 to 10 titles, I think that's pretty good. You know, I mean, Marvel and DC are doing 60, 70, 100 books sometimes a month. So I thought that was pretty good. So we'll just say, we'll say 1%. I think it was like hovered between like 0.85 and 0.92%. The last time I looked at this for September, which of course I do keep track of these things sometimes, Valiant was at like a 0.35%. So that's like, I don't know, 50, almost 60% drop in just a few months. And sure, the line has shrunk a little bit, but not much because Valiant was already condensing their line quite a bit when this whole thing happened. But things have shrunk down quite a bit. I don't hear a lot of people talking about Valiant. In fact, the group of people that I mostly hang out with and talk with on a daily basis, the majority of them podcasters on this very network, the Nerd Legion Network, they're not really excited for it either. Because the thing is, the exciting thing about Valiant is, if you went to a convention, for example, there was a giant booth. And who was working at that giant booth but everybody that actually made the comics? The CEO was there. the sales manager was there, marketing director was there, at all the conventions. And it didn't have a large convention schedule. They might do like, I don't know, 10, 12 a year. But it didn't matter, right? Because those guys were there and they built personal relationships with those people. And after this whole takeover, none of that was there. None of that was there. There were new faces popping in. Those faces didn't seem as excited. And I remember going to a con and you would see these guys just handing out books, talking to everybody, shaking hands. Obviously, they knew fans by name, and the new people just didn't have that. In fact, when I would go by the booth, they were just kind of hanging out, talking to each other. They weren't reaching out to other fans, and it was kind of sad to see. And it wasn't just my personal experience, because I've heard the stories from other folks. And so, I don't know. I mean, I understand you can't have that presence everywhere, but there's something about that infectiousness, right, that makes you want to be a fan. Because the people making the books are excited, so of course you should be excited. And I've never had that experience at a Dark Horse booth. I mean, I've seen Dark Horse booths a couple of times. Personally, they're fairly dry, but I think the majority of slightly larger companies' booths are kind of dry, right? Like Image booths are dry. Marvel DC booths are dry. So is the Dark Horse booth, right? Like there's a guy sitting in front of a register, and you might have like one or two people walking around, but they're not engaging, right? Like if you have a question, they'll help you. But they're not engaging, and chances are they're not somebody working on the comics either. It might be just an intern or whatever. And I understand you can't have that every time, right? Like you can't have Dan DiDio and Jim Lee show up at every convention and run the DC booth. It's unreal and unrealistic. But there's something about that personal feeling, right? And that's one thing I love about Aftershock, for example. And the cool thing is I've followed Joe's career for 25 years. I've loved his work for a long time, and now he's running that company, and it's great to go to a convention and see him there, regardless of the size of the booth. Because I've been to cons where they had a pretty large booth, some were just a table, probably the size of my desk. But you know what? Joe was there, and he's always very personable. And there's something about that personal experience. And Dark Horse has always been a little bit larger, so, you know, I don't expect, like, Richardson to show up and be at a convention, shaking hands and talking about the books. But you've got to have that excitement. So my concern is that Dark Horse would end up turning into something of kind of what Valiant has turned into, which to me is a little sad. And if anybody from Valiant wants to reach out to me and talk to me about this, by all means, go ahead. But this opinion has never been hidden from anybody. I've talked about this even when I was doing a Valiant podcast. I don't want Dark Horse to kind of go by the wayside and be run by people who really are just after recouping an investment, because that seems to me, in this case, very similar to what has happened over at Valiant. And I don't want that from Dark Horse, because Dark Horse has a long-standing history of doing amazing comics. And they still put out amazing comics that not enough people read, but they're still great. They're still great. And I hope that this is a good thing for not only Dark Horse, for comic fans as well. And I hope that whatever deal has been worked out between these two companies is actually beneficial for everybody involved, and not just for the investors. Anyways, if you want to chime in, let me know what you thought. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at GeekVine. You can email me, yell@comictalk.today, and I'll catch you on the next one.